Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.
All right, welcome to the latest edition of Hear That Podcast Growl. And Paul Diener Jr., Jay Morrison of The Athletic are excited to power through. We are on Tuesday, this past Tuesday, we welcomed Dane Brugler, our resident draft guru and author of The Beast. Highly recommend going back and listening to that. We also talked Chase vs. Sewell, Bengals Civil War with Robert Mays, who had a great piece on a really kind of a deep look on where those positions come from and kind of a real in-depth analysis of what that looks like through the lens of roster building in today's NFL. And both those conversations are up from Tuesday, if you didn't listen to that, which meant our three draft strategy pieces for this week. We're going to go through all of them right here on this one. You excited about this, Jay?
I am. It's a great way to spend tax day.
Oh, is normally, it tax day?
This is normally the day I do my taxes, but then they gave us another month, so I'll be doing my taxes May 15th. So yeah, let's talk Bengals draft.
Yes. I don't want to. You got me. You just made me start thinking about. Wait, I haven't sent my tax. What did I do that? That's a bad, you got me in a bad headspace now. All right, I also want to tell everybody, make sure you keep an eye out. Dane Brugler had his 7-round mock draft that is up that you can kind of go through that now up on the site. And Jay has sort of a look at what he did for the Bengals there and why that might be right or wrong. Zach Kiefer has a incredible story on Chris Wessling. The late Chris Wessling, who was Bengals fans, certainly probably know him. He was on Around the NFL on the podcast there and was from here. He wrote an incredible piece, on the Bengals offense under Bill Walsh, back in the '70s and how it started the way the entire NFL goes. And just a great personality. I used to love talking to him at NFL functions, on how people are still kind of reeling from his loss. It's a tough one to get through, but man, it really, I think, captures a lot of what Chris was to the NFL community and a lot of people here that followed the Bengals in Cincinnati. So highly recommend that also up on the site. But prominently, as it continues, are our three draft strategy series pieces for this week, and that includes defensive end, defensive tackle, and kicker. Kicker will come in later. We even touched on a little bit on Tuesday. Here's the interesting thing, Jay. This team has a type. They have a very much have a personality. Okay. Like, you ever have a buddy like, man, why? He's just always dating blondes. Like, there's just no other options out there. Right. I mean, look, I've got 10 years of facts here. All he ever does is date blondes. Right. Or whatever. The Bengals do not draft defensive linemen at the tops of drafts. They have not taken a defensive lineman in the first round since Justin Smith in 2001. And that includes his edge and defensive tackle. We're talking about both of those. They're the only team to not have drafted a first round defensive lineman since 2002, about almost 20 drafts. And they have the fewest total draft picks in the first two rounds of defensive linemen. They only have three that they took in the second round over the course of the last two decades. That's it. And it was a run from 2010 to 2013 where they took three second rounders in 4 years, which included Carlos Dunlap. They added Marcus Hunt and... Oh, why am I blanking on
Devin
the
Still?
One?
Yeah, thank two you. Of those they shouldn't thank have
you.
Taken.
Yeah, Marcus Hunt, Devin Still. A really, really interesting strategy because of this, Jay. People would want to criticize them. It has worked.
Yeah.
They have become fantastic at finding defensive linemen, quality, productive, Pro Bowl, all pro defensive linemen in these middle rounds. It's a wild trait that has really defined them with this critical position.
Yeah, I mean, that's it. That's why they have the type, because it has worked. They actually have a lot of types. There's a lot of things they seem to do over and over and over again. And part of that is because of the continuity, where there's never any change in the front office. And there's been, well, if you go back to Justin Smith, there's been two changes, going from Dick LeBeau to Marvin and then Marvin to Zach. But it's been a very continuous thought process, decision-making. It's all worked in concert. And so that makes sense that you, number one, even if it didn't work, that you still have the same mindset where you're going to do it this way until it does work. And because it has worked, then it just makes even more sense that they keep going back to this method. And this year might be the biggest need they've had at both spots, in this run, and I still don't think we're going to see them go. Well, we know they're not going first round, and I still don't think we're going to see them go first or second round with defensive linemen. Maybe second round, but more than likely, we're talking third, fourth, fifth.
Yeah, I think maybe second round. I mean, you could see a scenario where they maybe make that play. They would leave them in a lurch on a couple of offensive positions. And just, we've talked about this a couple times. This is the first time we've really gone in on the defense here. And it feels like it's the first time we've really gone in on defense at all this draft season, because the way they plotted free agency, the way free agency turned out was so defensive heavy, it left them to kind of take, okay, we're going to take care of defense in free agency, and we're going to get a young, fun offense to grow with Joe Burrow on the other side. And that seems to be the strategy. It's certainly where they've left themselves open. But you know, they did not really, they found a more permanent fixture in the swap out of Lawson for Trey Hendrickson. But people forget that third spot, essentially, you know, the old Carl Lawson spot, which was behind, you know, the third guy behind Hubbard and Dunlap, who's in there primarily on passing situations, unfilled, wide open. The defensive tackle, the three technique spot, wide open. Larry Ogunjobi takes it over. He's on a 1-year deal. You know, first of all, you need depth. Second of all, like, let's talk about a long-term fixture, especially in a draft that doesn't have a whole lot of options at the top, where you're probably getting somebody that you are going to try to develop and then hope by next year he's really a guy. You know, you've got others you could maybe try, like Mike Daniels. You can try to squeeze him in there. He's, you know, that's not necessarily going to be a game changer, and definitely not a long-term option. So these spots are still as wide open as any on the roster. In fact, I would venture to say, of all their picks, it would be totally on par and make total sense if the only defensive players they selected in this draft were defensive linemen
in the fourth and fifth round.
Right.
I mean, that's just the way it feels. And it would be rare to see them go four consecutive offensive players. It's been a long time since they've done that. So, yeah, it feels like the second round's really not. It could be in play, but probably not. Maybe third. But really, it feels like it's going to be a D end and then an interior guy in the fourth and the fifth round. And then just a matter of which order they take those guys.
Yeah. And I think you could throw the third in there. I don't think that would be necessarily that out of the question, where you're, you know, maybe there's, you know, they're taking another offensive lineman in the fourth or whatever. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's different ways, but it's that middle. I mean, that's kind of where they have found their hole. And here's another part of that. So I was really interested, particularly in defensive tackles, and we're talking pass rush. So there is a fit. Look, run stopping guys are great. They seem to have a lot of those guys now. Like they really valued it, and they have collected those. I mean, even in the depth aspects, I mean, DJ Reader, while he has wiggle in the passing game and can give you a little bit, He's a run-stopping defensive tackle. Josh Tupo, who's going to be there in the mix, is a run-stopping defensive tackle. Sam Hubbard is, I think he led the league in run-stop percentage last year. You've got Hendrickson. I don't know what he can bring you necessarily there, but you've just got a lot of these pieces in there. Mike Daniels, that can be more of the run-stop variety. They're just lacking pass rush, and they were dead last in sacks last year, you know, and they need it. So that's the profile. Like, if we're talking about things that guys may lack, if you're in the fourth and fifth round, maybe a guy lacks any of the run stop stuff that you want, but you feel like you can maybe teach that to him, but he's got real pass rush ability. Think along those lines from both positions, edge and defensive tackle. In defensive tackle in particular, I went back and looked, like, let's talk about the guys, right? Who were the guys? So over the last 5 years, I looked at Pro Football Focus has their, they now have opened up, which is great. I mean, look, if this series hasn't been anything but a advertisement for how good PFF's deep stats are, I don't know what it is. I highly recommend getting a subscription there too. They've opened up pass rush win percentage, which I think is a great way to really look at who's being disruptive. Because even if the ball comes out, did you win? How often are you winning? And it gives you a real list of who guys have been the best. So I found guys who ranked in the top 10 in defensive tackle pass rush win percentage at least twice in the last 5 years. So not some crazy one-off consistency. It churns out 12 guys. Of those 12, Jay, have you looked at that list yet?
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't know if I could quiz you on it. Of those 12, three were first round picks. Three. And one of them, Cam Hayward, was 31. He was almost in the second. Fletcher Cox and Aaron Donald are your real guys. The rest of them are all further down in the draft. You've got three second rounds, a third round, two fours, and three fives. I mean, these guys can be found. They can be developed. They figure out ways to overcome however the league is judging them and make it work and become dominant players. It's really interesting, and it coincides with what we talked about to open this podcast about the Bengals' strategy. I mean, it does seem the league plays itself out that way.
The guy that really surprised me on that list was Mike Daniels.
Yeah.
Now, you talked about it where he can be effective in the – that's not his strong suit, but he can be effective against the pass. Do you remember the 2 years that he was in the top five?
The 16 and 17, I believe. Yeah. I have it on my deep. I didn't show that work. I have that. But it was right at the front. And similar with Geno. Geno's last year, I believe it was 16. Right. He was the same 16 and 17. No, he had three, 16, 17, and 18. He snuck into 10th. And then he hasn't 19 and 20. Obviously, he was further down the list. But yeah, it was sort of, you know, it was earlier on, and then you started to see a little bit of the wear on him as he's crossed 30.
Yeah, but there's just, I mean, you know, guy Grady Jarrett and Malik Jackson, those guys, those fifth round guys that are as good as anybody that was taken second, third round. It just kind of reinforces the Bengals' plan or, you know, thought process here of getting these guys late, because you can. It's like a running back. You don't necessarily need to use a high pick to get high value out of one of these guys.
Yeah. All right, let's take a second and switch gears here and hear from a sponsor.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Let's talk about who one of these guys can be. I think if you look at some of these guys in the back, I mean, there's an interesting, what surprised you from the edge rusher dig, Jay, that maybe pinpointed, you know, some guys that kind of fit this mold that we think they're going to be looking for?
There are guys that it's not the the top heavy group of edge rushers we've seen in the past. But you look at all the guys that will be or should be available third, fourth, fifth round, and there's a lot to choose from. And I think that it just, again, it plays into why wouldn't they stick with what they know well? And you're right. You mentioned it. You know, all these guys, they're going to have some sort of wart on their game, but that's what the Bengals are good at in determining where the lesser of the evils are and where they think they can improve these guys. We did it in our four round mock. We three of the four had Patrick Jones, and Dane Brugler in his seven round mock still had Patrick Jones available in the fourth round and had the Bengals go a different direction. He just feels like a fit there. And as much as they typecast, for a long time, they had the long, tall guys. And I think that Carl Lawson kind of showed them that you can get the faster, smaller guys and still be as effective. And maybe they get away from that template a little bit. You wonder how much of that was front office and how much of that was, Jay Hayes and Marvin and what they liked in the defensive ends. And now that we've seen a changeover a couple times over with defensive line coaches and a changeover with the head coach, if maybe they do start moving off of that long, tall defensive end prototype that they leaned on for so long.
Yeah, I think we often be quizzing the defensive coordinator, whoever it was in recent years, about that. And I do think there's a realization that, look, they all shapes and sizes, particularly when you're talking about what they're looking for. With Hubbard and Hendrickson in there as sort of staples of the edge for on the long haul, you don't care how the rotational pass rusher guy gets there. Mm-hmm. Just a dude that can get there, right? And speed and bending the edge – like that's more valuable than anything. And, you know, especially when you're talking about a guy that you're not even necessarily looking at as a three down pass rusher. I get intrigued. You had the pass rush productivity numbers from some of the edge rushers that were there. And it's funny, we talk about Patrick Jones, but Rashad Weaver, Pitt, man.
Yeah.
Pitt was hounding. Pitt was hounding folks this past year, and they will. You look at, if you want to have some fun and think about what the Bengals could be adding in the third or fourth round at the edge rusher position, just go watch Pitt film, because you'll see Rashad Weaver out there too, who was a top five pass rush productivity guy last year amongst all your draft eligible edges. And so there's a couple of different names there in the mix that, you know, Dane said this on the show earlier this week, where, you know, there's not the top heavy, but man, there's a lot of guys in that 20 to 80. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of guys that, so it's like, if you want one, you know, if that is where you want to pinpoint, there's going to be somebody available, and probably somebody that you have yourself a much higher grade on. They were in the fourth round. You'll be getting someone you had a second or third round grade on just because of the sheer quantity of it. And you hope that you're finding your Sam Hubbard, who is another perfect example of these mid-round guys they've brought in.
And he as the taller, longer guy, he fits that old prototype. And that's one of the things I think is interesting. You mentioned it, the third down specialist. It's one thing to have a guy come in and be fresh and be able to, you know, just kind of explode. And I think it's almost more important that you don't let the opposing tackles get comfortable. If you replace a 6'6 guy with the 80-inch wingspan with another 6'6 guy and an 80-inch wingspan, that it doesn't make the tackle adjust. If you bring in a totally different prototype on third downs, then that stresses the good tackles are going to be able to work against any edge rusher, but it just puts more stress on them if you're throwing different types at them. And there's all type, whatever type they want, they can find in this draft, in those middle rounds. Like Dane said, 20 to 80, take your pick. They're going to have a lot of options, and that it almost makes you wonder. It seems like fourth round, maybe they go tackle before they go edge, because they're just because of the sheer numbers, there are more edges. But it's going to be interesting to see which way they go, because there's all, it's not just the different body types. You've got guys from small schools where you have the question about, you know, who they've played against and quality of competition and all that. There are just so many different ways to go. It's really kind of, it's hard to pick a specific player, even though we landed on Patrick Jones over and over and over again.
Yeah. I mean, that's, we use him because he seems to fit the profiles, but you know, they have a lot of their own views of, you know, and a deeper breadth of guys that maybe they feel like are fits. The thing you mentioned about different styles, I love. You said those, the good tackles can handle all. Yeah, well, there's a lot of not good tackles out, yes, there that are still playing, and they have a weakness. And the weakness may be speed rusher, or the weakness may be more of a power guy. And the ability to throw a different style at somebody who has a weakness towards that style, and have all of those available in your bag it can be a big deal. And that's why I do think, you know, you're looking for it this year more so than ever. Give me Carl Lawson, right? Find Carl Lawson of this year in the fourth round again, right? Like, that's kind of the way it goes. You mentioned, will they go defensive tackle or would they go edge first? There's a number of interesting names amongst the defensive tackles, because this is just, it's not a good draft for defensive tackles. You know, you're talking about a couple of guys, Barmore, and Azarike. I looked up the pronunciation and I forgot it, from Washington. I mean, these are the guys at the top. And both will go off before the Bengals probably even pick in the second round, or maybe they, one of them will be available, doubtful. But that would be the only shot of seeing them probably go in early on that position. Another one I wanted to mention, is, and I put him in here, Milton Williams out of Louisiana Tech. Super intriguing guy who, you know, we haven't talked a ton about random athletic score here, but it's a really fun thing to follow to get athletic profiles and historical context on those, at MathBomb on Twitter, in case you're not. And he has Milton Williams. Now, they have him as a defensive end prospect. Defensive tackle prospect would have him just as freaky. But his random athletic score of 9.98, basically he's elite in three of the four areas, speed, agility, and explosion. Ranked fourth out of 1,325 defensive ends from 87 to 2021. Okay? Freak show. The other side of that, I like taking these two things together, go to PFF's draft guide, and they talk about how he really seemed to figure out how his athleticism worked the second half of this last year. Like, guy on the rise, seemed to start to figure out how to use these freaky skills. But he played at Louisiana Tech. He has a small sample size of proven he can do it. So he's going to be around later in the draft. A really intriguing name for maybe round three, or potentially slipping further down, where you can really, I mean, ceiling is through the roof. Is the roof is the ceiling? Isn't that the, that's Michael?
Yeah.
Ceiling's roof. I mean, I think that's where you're at with this one, because there's a lot of potential there. And I wonder how much teams will value that and push him up their boards.
Yeah, that was Dane's pick for the Bengals in the third round in his draft. And you know, I kind of mentioned in my piece that I like the pick itself, but he hadn't taken a tackle yet. And I don't know. The Bengals need guards too, and he had him taking Landon Dickerson in the second round, which isn't a bad pick, but it feels like it would be a failure to not get a tackle in the first three rounds, unless you're really sold on Fred Johnson or Hakeem Adeniji being your swing guy. And I don't think that's the case. But it's interesting because Dane has Milton Williams as his fourth best interior. He lists him as an interior guy, but he says he projects as a three technique, and he can play end and base. So if you're talking not just his freakish athleticism, but the versatility he can give you, where, you know, if something were to happen to Hubbard or Hendrickson, he could slide outside and play edge on first and second down. And then, you know, you still need that that third down pass rush specialist, or maybe he develops into that. But it's a really intriguing option, and it would probably have to be there in the third round. I don't know. Even though the small school aspect, I don't know he would still be around in the fourth round.
Yeah, but you know, look, how often has Lou Anarumo used the term multiple, mm-hmm. right? Like wanting to be multiple, do different things. We've seen them use that funky 3-4 thing a lot. They've been looking for 4-3 though. I mean, that a guy, you know, I think tweener is often used against guys, but I feel like in today's defense, I mean, I think it can be an advantage if used correctly. Look, you can rush the passer, you can't. Like it, whether, you know, let's not turn 285 pounds into no man's land. It's not. It's about athleticism. It's about being able to get there. Can you beat the guy in front of you? And theoretically, if that's somebody who can figure it out, I'm not going to be turned off by, is he a defensive end? Is he a defensive tackle? Does he have the size right to do either? Like, plus you can work with that stuff. I mean, you can add pounds, you can lose, you can whatever you want to do. Obviously, athleticism, not an issue with Milton Williams. So, you know, you've got a few other names out there. I mentioned Aleem McNeil from NC State. We've seen the Bengals under Zach Taylor talk about their good relationship with NC State's coaches, which kind of leans me towards McNeil in the mix. Dave Doran there. I mean, that they talked about that a lot with Pratt and Finley, that draft, about a good relationship down there and having trust. And now that trust may tell you don't take Aleem McNeil, but it may say the opposite. So I kind of keep him in there as a guy who could be a third or fourth round with some upside too. And we've seen the Bengals defensive line coach working out Marvin Wilson at Florida State, which is why I mentioned him specifically as a potential prediction. When you see him there, you know, same way we saw him, we saw Marion Hobby in Houston for Peyton Turner on the edge. Another of them kind of looking closer at those second round edge guys.
And you have, again, going back to the how in the world did anybody throw the ball against Pitt, but Jalen Twyman is Dane's 15th ranked interior defensive. So they had two edge guys and a interior guy that are just great. They're going to be drafted this year. So there are a lot of intriguing, I think – I'm trying to remember. I think it was one of the two mocks. I can't remember if it was the Pitts or the Chase when we did the four-way mock. But I had him taking Bobby Brown in the fourth round, the fifth round. I'm sorry, the Texas A&M defensive tackle. It's not the greatest class, but there are guys who could be what the Bengals need them to be, which is a backup to Ogunjobi, and then possibly develop into a starter. And if not, then maybe next year's interior defensive line class is a little stronger and you attack that position a little earlier.
Okay, run, pass, or boot, as we do.
Yes.
Run, pass, or boot round. The Bengals will have added both a defensive tackle and a defensive end. 4, 5, 6 or later. Run, pass, or boot. What are you doing, Jay?
I'm going to run with 6th or later. Because we all know what one and two, what's happening in the first round, one of those two guys. The double dip with offensive linemen feels like a really strong possibility, second, third round. And I still think it was this way before, but with the release of Gio, running back becomes an even more high likelihood early on day 3. So I think they get one of those guys in the fourth or fifth round, and they wait probably an end. And I could see him wait until the 6th to get a tackle. So I'm going to run with 6 or later. I'll pass on 5th, and I'll boot. I don't think they have both those guys in place by the 4th, unless they pull off a trade and they've got some extra fourth round picks. But if the way that their picks are constructed right now, that'd be the way I go. 6th or later, 5th, and then I'll boot 4th.
That's the scenario, right? I mean, it's the patented Bengals second round trade back. If they feel like there's just a ton of guys they like, or maybe they like some of the offensive tackles. We've talked about that group where there's kind of a bunch on a tier that could be a little even further back in the second, where they're comfortable going back there and adding a four, knowing that they can take two shots at the defensive line fourth round theory that they've loved over the years. To me, that's the way that they don't pick four players in the first four rounds and two of them are defensive linemen. It's not impossible. Like, they just check their four biggest need boxes off: receiver, offensive line, defensive end, defensive tackle. It's not impossible. Obviously, I just think it, I'm with you. I think it's the least likely. The most likely way that one happens is with a trade. And just because how much they do that, I'm going to run with six or later. But I'm just going to pass on the fourth, with the potential of the trade being what pushes it over. And then I guess I'm just going to boot the fifth because it's the last one. But I think those are two strategies that you just typically see from them. And so I'm gonna go with that, because I do think that's why they like moving back in the second, because they really like fourth round picks, and they particularly like what they've been able to do with fourth round picks at the defensive line position, and their results prove it. There's a reason why they would value that. You know, their names are Geno Atkins and Carl Lawson and all these guys they've gotten over the years in that draft, and this could be the position they're looking at. So an interesting strategy to think about when we're talking about draft day.
And another name that we haven't mentioned on this show, but you mentioned in your piece, the total wild card, another fourth round defensive lineman, Ronnell Wren. We still don't know what that guy is. And they were really high on him when he came in, and just a mountain of a man and two really unfortunate injuries. Didn't see him at all. Was it the very first training camp practice last year when he went down?
Yeah.
I think it was.
So. Yep.
So that is it. The injury history alone is a concern, and then the fact that he hasn't had time to really develop because he's been out of action for so long. But that is a really intriguing wild card there, because he could be in that Mike Daniels role where he's really good against the run, but his length and his size, he could push the pocket and be a force on pass downs on the interior as well. It's just one of those big unknowns right now.
Really important preseason for him, where it's going to be, because it's going to be a crowded room in there, and they're looking for something new. If he can't come in and look good in camp and preseason, you know, I could certainly see them letting him go, and you could see a potential of him not even making it there with injury issues. We'll see how he comes off those. I mean, theoretically, he should be fine, but you never know what happens when you start taking physicals and the doctors get closer look at it. So, all right, let's just take a quick break. Let's touch on kicker and we'll get out. We talked a little bit about this the other day. You know, I think there's a very real chance that they take one. Of course, we've talked about so much of these positions that they need and some of the success that they've had late in drafts. It's just kind of a sixth, seventh round wild card. Like, are you going to feel like do you really like a guy? And the other side of it is, if they are without a kicker, when the draft ends, they have a really good chance of getting whoever the best guy is available that wasn't drafted, because who wouldn't want to come here? This was asked to be the clearest path to start against being a starting kicker in the entire league right now is right here.
Yeah, and that's what those guys talk about all the time. You can throw signing bonuses and preferred free agent, give them more money. Every time you talk to an undrafted free agent and ask him why he chose this team, opportunity is the number one answer, no matter what the position is. And you're right. Maybe there's some other teams out there with dicey kicker situations that would pass on a kicker as well, but If that happens, then you figure everybody's passing on kickers, and there's three decent ones out there, and it would be really surprising for them to not get one of those guys. I think Dane had two kickers going. He had the McPherson from Florida, and then Borogales from Miami going in his seven round mock. And I think Borogales was the Patriots. I can't remember where McPherson went, but that still leaves Riley Patterson from Memphis would be available. So I guess it just depends on how the draft plays out. And if they're happy with what they have at the time, they'll take a kicker in the seventh round. If they feel like maybe they need to add something in this seventh round, you're talking probably a DB or a wide receiver. Those seem to be the most popular picks in that seventh round. And then they roll the dice on a kicker, but there's going to be somebody by the end of the night Saturday that's going to be competing with Austin Seibert.
No doubt. And you know, the other names I mentioned as sleepers, Alex Kessman from Pittsburgh, who was really good from deep, and Blake Hobble from Ohio State, who was very good for them. So, you know, there's other names out there.
You mentioned the Pittsburgh kid that reminded me. I looked up earlier in the week, the stadium with the worst kicking percentage over 50 yards is Heinz Field. And that guy has the NCAA record for over 50 accuracy, and he kicks at Heinz Field. So that, I mean, that's something that Bengal fans hammered on Bullock all the time about, you know, the miss the easy ones and didn't have a big leg. That would be an interesting prospect if you get a guy, the most accurate over 50 kicker in NCAA history, and he did it in the hardest stadium to kick in.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we talked so much about how they felt like their offense was limited when they had Randy, and even going back to Mike Nugent, and that part of the Marvin unwillingness to kick long kicks thing. But, you know, the league has changed, and these guys, I mean, Butker and Zerline, and they changed the game completely with their ability to kick from deep. And once you hit the 40-yard line, you feel like you're good for 3 points half the time, and total comfort there because of the length of some of these guys. Well, Kessman would kind of be a good example of that, just because of the success he's shown with how good he's been from deep. Jay, you got to be really going deep. You got to tell me how many of Kessman's kicks happened in Heinz Field.
Well, next show I'll have that for you.
That's the challenge, next show. All right, really excited for next week on Tuesday. It's time for our boy Jamar Chase to enter the front of the equation. That means we're talking receivers, and we're going to talk on their whole receiver class. We're going to be going deep on Chase. I'm excited about at least one guest. We're going to have potentially two to talk about him. So look forward to that show coming up on Tuesday. Hope you would check back. So yeah, the full wide receiver deep dive, including a lot of Jamar Chase talk, happening on Tuesday's podcast. Also, I guess we should note. We should note that the Bengals are getting new uniforms, in case you didn't hear that. But they announced when that's actually happening. That's going to be on Monday. So we'll probably have some reaction to the Bengals' new uniforms, which we've already seen, sort of coming out. But there will be there's a lot more associated with that the team is doing. So we'll have some reaction to that also on Tuesday's show. So all that coming. Hope you will check back then, and look forward to having you in. So hope everybody enjoyed it, and we'll talk to you later.